Well, for the past few weeks, we've been following Jesus around in different settings. And this week, he's been invited to dinner in the house of a really religious person. And I'm going to have to change the way you're thinking, probably, about the picture in your mind of this dinner. Take Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper and put it away, okay? That is not at all what the table looked like. In fact, there wasn't even a table. There would have been mats laid out in a U shape. The Romans called that a triclinium. It was a three-sided eating arrangement where the servers could come into the middle and serve everyone who would be sitting at table. But when you sat at table, you really didn't sit at table. You reclined at table. So that you would sit leaning on your left arm, you would use your right hand and bread to dip into the various bowls of food, the bread as a spoon. You would be stretched out with your feet pointing away from the table, which is why this story makes no sense unless you have that picture in your head. Because the woman who came in to this probably semi-public gathering went to the place at the table where Jesus reclined and was able to hold his feet and weep on his feet and wash them with her tears. So you got that picture now? So, in the middle of this quite nice dinner by a very important religious figure, this strange woman, who we are told is a sinner, we are not told what kind of sinner, we're not told what she did to get that reputation, but she is a sinner, breaks in and disrupts the whole meal. She begins to weep and wail, and her tears fall on Jesus' feet. She's kneeling at his feet as he stretches out away from the table. And she cries so much, she literally washes his feet with her tears. And then she does something even more disruptive and scandalous. She lets down her hair. At this time, that was a highly sexually charged act. Okay? It would be very close to opening your blouse. That offensive. So she lets her hair down, and she begins to dry his feet from the tears that she shed on them with her hair. She's shameless, obviously, but we were told from the start she was a sinner, right? What do you expect? And then she takes an alabaster jar, and she begins to pour oil on Jesus' feet, and she kisses his feet, and she anoints his feet. Now, can you imagine being at what we would consider at least a semi-formal dinner and have someone break in and do this? The good religious fellow who had invited Jesus and all the other guests and who had not invited the woman, interestingly enough, says to himself, if this man were a prophet, you see, we're still dealing with that. We've been dealing with that for several weeks now. Who is this Jesus? Is he a prophet? Is he more than a prophet? Is he less than a prophet? Well, it's pretty clear the opinion of the good religious fellow who invited him, because he thinks to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know what kind of woman this is. The implication being, he would have put a stop to this. If he had known what kind of woman this was, he would have made her stop and he would have told her to leave. What we know about Jesus, however, is that he is more than a prophet, according to the Gospel of Luke, and that he welcomes her for the very reason that the good religious guy thinks he ought to push her away. An indicator that Jesus is more than a prophet is he seems to know what his host is thinking. Now, quite frankly, if your dinner had been disrupted in this way by someone who had a terrible reputation, who you specifically did not invite to come, it wouldn't be hard to guess what you were thinking. Would it? It really wasn't that hard for Jesus to guess what his host was thinking. So Jesus says, Simon, I need to tell you a story. Said there was a man who loaned money, and two people borrowed money from him. One person borrowed about a year and a half's wages. Think what that would be for you. Wages for about a year and a half of work. The other borrowed about a month and a half's wages. One day, when the lender was feeling generous, he said, just forget it. Neither of you have to pay the money back. We'll just mark it off the books. No repayment. Paid in full. And then Jesus asked his host, who do you think will love the lender more? And of course, he got the right answer. We good religious folk always get the right answer, don't we? The one who forgave the larger debt. Just makes sense, right? The only problem is we good religious folk are always getting the right answer. We're just not doing the right stuff. Because almost immediately Jesus says, looking at the woman but addressing his host. Isn't that interesting the way Luke frames that? Jesus is looking at the woman but addressing Simon. He says, when I came here, you didn't welcome me appropriately. You offered me no kiss, and yet she's been kissing my feet since she came in. You did not offer to wash my feet, yet she has washed my feet with her tears, dried them with her hair. You offered me no honorable welcome, and she has been welcoming me ever since she entered the room. Because of this, her sins are forgiven. Remember that story? Those who are forgiven a lot learn to love a lot. Those of us who don't think we need to be forgiven in the first place never learn to love. This is what Luke is getting at, I think, in this whole scene. Because it doesn't really make any sense what Jesus is saying. You mean the worst among us, when they are forgiven, learn to love more than those of us who have followed all the rules all of our life, who've gotten all the right answers all of our lives? And Jesus is saying, yeah. It's kind of troublesome for us good religious folk, isn't it? Because I think that's who Luke wants us to identify with, the host. We are the ones sitting there thinking, what in the world is she doing here? Who invited her? Why is she making such a fuss? And in all of that, Jesus welcomes her. We may get all the right answers. You know, we may know the creeds. We may know how to answer the right questions for confirmation. We may have all that knowledge. And yet, because so often we don't feel like we've done anything particularly bad, and so we don't need to be forgiven, we never learn the depth of love that comes from facing our brokenness. It's a variation of what Jesus says elsewhere. Take the log out of your own eye first, then you can take the speck out of your neighbor's eye. One of the problems we face growing up in the church, especially if we've participated all of our lives and we've been good folk all of our lives, is that we have never really faced the need to ask for forgiveness with the same depth, the same need, the same emptiness and hurt that folks who have lived really, really hard lives have learned to do. For them, forgiveness opens a whole new life. It frees them from the prison that they were in previously. And it opens the door to a new way of living. Jesus says to the woman, your sins are forgiven. And the people around him all say, who is this that forgives sins? Now, we don't know the inflection they used when they said that. Did they say, who is this that he can even forgive sins? Or more likely it would be, who is this guy who thinks he can forgive sins? Because they knew only God could forgive sins. But he says again, your faith has made you whole. Now, she hasn't said a word. right? Her faith has not been expressed in a single solitary word. It has all been expressed in action. Her coming in, her making a scene, her not caring what other people thought about her, weeping, washing Jesus' feet, drying them with her hair, anointing them and kissing them, all of that was the expression of her faith. She didn't have to say a word. It was in what she did. He said, "Go in peace." I don't know how much peace she had known prior to this. People who live on the street, people who have incredibly hard lives, people we define as sinner or outcast, don't often have a whole lot of peace. But that's what Jesus offers her. Go forth into a new world, into a new way of living, into a new life. As I said earlier, we're going to be at annual conference for the next few days. Your clergy and your lay delegates will be. And it'll start this afternoon. It'll end on Wednesday. And every year we have someone to come in and speak as a Bible study leader or a teacher of some sort. This year, that person is Dr. L. Gregory Jones. And Greg has written several books. His most recent is Christian Social Innovation. Sounds like a real page-turner, doesn't it? Actually, it's a really good book. It is a really good book, and it's not that long. But he describes what he called tradition innovation, and we do that really well here, I think. We hold on to those traditions that form who we are and ground us, and yet we aren't willing to let go of those things that imprison us and hold us back. That open into a new life, that provide us with a new way of seeing others and a new way of seeing the world. And what Greg Jones says is that the thing that makes that happen is forgiveness. It is forgiveness that frees us from the prison of the past and that opens an avenue into new life. He tells a story about a woman from Burundi named Maggie. Back in the 90s, I know you all were aware of the terrible tribal conflict in Rwanda. Well, it was also taking place in Burundi as well. Tutsis and Hutus killing each other. And in Maggie's village, her neighbors slaughtered those of the other tribe. They beat her up because she was of their tribe, but she was considered a traitor, the only thing that saved her life. They killed her best friend, and she took in her best friend's children. Now, she could have escaped. She could have simply tried to leave the country and probably could have made her way to at least a refugee camp, but she did not. She stayed where she was. Not only did she take in her friend's children, she took in 25 orphans to raise because their parents had been killed in that slaughter. Now, one of the issues in that situation was that the people who had done the slaughtering were still living in the community with those who had survived it. Now, a number left, a number escaped, but there were still those two communities living together. And what Maggie decided to do was to create what she called the House of Peace, a place where people from both tribes could come together, a place where these children would find a safe haven. And in the very spot where the worst of the massacre took place, she decided to build a swimming pool. Some people called her mad. They said she's a mad woman. Others called her an angel. But in that swimming pool, children from both tribes were invited to come and get to know each other in a different way, on a different level. She began to reach out to the community to help rebuild houses for those children who had been orphaned. And for one particular child, the man who had killed her parents lived in that same village. And when Maggie asked him to come and help with the rebuilding of the houses, he resisted. It took a while. But after a while, he showed up one morning and began to help rebuild the house for the children of the people he had killed. And though it took 7 years, he finally came to those children and told them how sorry he was that he had left them orphaned, that he had gotten caught up in something that he didn't feel like he could control, and he was genuinely sorry for what he had done. His actions had said that earlier, just like the actions of the woman. Whatever her sins were, who knows? Her actions spoke even louder than her words, so that when he finally came and spoke the words, it just confirmed what he had already done. Now, we in our families don't wind up killing each other for the most part, although there are families that do experience that. Oh, but we can certainly give murderous looks, can't we? We stab each other with our words, and we cut each other down to size sometimes. And we still need that operative forgiveness that opens us into love. We don't get through this life without hurting someone. Sometimes inadvertently, sometimes on purpose. And we are locked in either the effects of having been hurt or the memory of having hurt someone else. We are imprisoned there until a word of forgiveness can be spoken. And once that word of forgiveness is spoken, it opens up a whole new way of life that Jesus calls love. We who are forgiven much learn to love much. We who persist in the delusion that we're good people and don't need forgiveness never have that opportunity to learn with the same measure of depth. And so my hope for all of us is that we can face those things we have done and those things that have been done to us. That we can offer a word of apology if we have been the actor and have hurt someone, and we can receive words of forgiveness. Or if others bring us an apology, we can offer words of forgiveness. Or perhaps, like Jesus, offer them even before they are asked for. In this community, in our larger lives, and who knows, maybe even at annual conference. Thanks be to God.